Well, last week in our study of the women in the genealogy of Jesus Christ and either the husband and or the sons that were related to him, we looked at, first of all, Tamar and Judah and Phares. And we saw sin in all its not so glorious workings. And yet the sovereignty of God was not kept from accomplishing its purposes. Sunday evening, we looked at Rahab the harlot. Rahab had a hopeless future. She was a harlot. And there wasn't much of a recovery from it. Once you get a bad reputation, rarely does it go away. But along comes a man by the name of Salmon who loved her. And we made reference to the love of God in Romans chapter 5 and verse 8, where it says, "But God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." What a wonderful, wonderful passage that was. I really, really enjoyed studying and proclaiming that one last Sunday night. But this morning we move on. Someone has rightly said that love is not only a noun, but it's a verb. So love acts. Love does something. And we want to look this morning at the story of a woman who was loved, and by a love that produced goodness in her life. Her name is Ruth, and she's got a book of the Old Testament named after her. It comes right after the book of Judges, which comes right after the book of Joshua. So Joshua judges Ruth. I don't know why Joshua judges Ruth, but Joshua judges Ruth. That's how I remember the order of those Old Testament books. We want to look this morning at a woman's faith and a man's grace, and relate it to the faith of a believer and the grace of God in salvation. Ruth chapter 1, I'm going to go through all four chapters this morning, so fasten your seatbelts. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Whether they should have gone or not, you can debate the issue. I am not going to debate the issue. It's not necessary for our text this morning. Maybe they should have, maybe they shouldn't, but they did. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came down into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth, and they dwelled there about 10 years. My, what a long famine. Well, I don't know that the famine lasted 10 years, and consequently you can argue the issue should they have stayed there for all of those 10 years. But the fact of the matter is they did, and I'm not going to argue it this morning because I have 3.5 more chapters to go. And Mahlon and Chilion died also, both of them, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return unto the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. She's going back, and she said, "Girls, there's no use in following me. Go home, find a husband, and live the rest of your lives there. I've appreciated how you've taken care of me. You've been good to me. But you have needs, and I can't do anything about it." And they said unto her, "Surely we will return with thee unto thy people." And Naomi said, "Turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb, that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband also tonight, and should also bear sons, would you tarry for them till they were grown? Would you stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Girls, I appreciate it. But the fact of the matter is, if you follow after me, you have no future whatsoever. I am without a husband. I am past that age where I'm looking for a husband. I'm not even bothering anymore. But even if I would have a husband tonight and were to become pregnant, you'd have to wait 15, 20 years till those boys would be grown, and you'd be 15, 20 years older than them. Do you want to wait around that long and have a husband that immature? Ladies, go home. Life will be better for you in Moab than coming with me back to Israel. And they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. Why the difference? May I suggest to you that Orpah heard what Ruth or Naomi said, and she said to herself, that makes a whole lot of sense. That is the wise thing to do. Can't go back there. There's nothing for me there. Might as well go home. And as much as I love my mother-in-law, this is the right thing to do. Whereas Ruth said, no, I think there is something better for me there. I don't know what it is, but I do know that the God of Naomi has supplied all these years. And now there's bread back in her homeland. He will supply for me there. How do I know that? Well, hang on just a second. And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. And thy people shall be my people, and most of all, thy God, my God. You've got a God that supplies. Mine doesn't. I want your God. I believe in Him. Where thou diest, will I die. There will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee from me. And when she saw that she was steadfast, that speaks to the quality of her faith. Nothing is going to deter me from going with you. I am convinced your God will supply. Then she left speaking unto her. So they too went until they came to Bethlehem. And as it came to pass, they were come to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them. And they said, is this Naomi? And they go on. Notice, drop down to verse 22. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite is her daughter-in-law with her, which returned out of the country of Moab. And they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. That's important. Here is two widow ladies coming back to a town where they will have ownership of a property, possibly a house that's still sitting on it, but no income whatsoever. What are they going to do in order to live? Well, they're coming back at the beginning of the barley harvest, which means that there is going to be food available. Now, there's no welfare system set up, no social security, no food banks. But the Mosaic law provided that if you were destitute, if you were poor, you could go out into the field of another after their reapers had gone, and they would specifically leave a certain amount of their grain for the poor, that the poor may harvest it of themselves. So there's going to be food available. Verse 2, and Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, mighty man of wealth, the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn, after him in whose sight I shall find grace. Here is a woman of faith looking for a person of grace. And it's always that way. Notice, faith comes before the grace. She's already a believer in Jehovah, the God of Israel. But she's received nothing from him. But she said, if I go out, there will be someone who will be gracious to me. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap was to light. In other words, she just so happened upon coincidence. No. Sovereignty of God. The providence of God in directing her. To light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless thee. Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, whose damsel, where'd she come from? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now. She's been out there all day, except for just a little while where she tarried in the house. She's been really working up a storm. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not into another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink that which the young men have drawn. I want you to stay right here. Don't you go anywhere else. I've made sure that my men know that you are supposed to be there. They're not going to in any way tell you to get lost. And when you get thirsty, laboring out there in the hot sun all day long, don't be afraid to partake of the water that's set aside for my men. Take all that you want. Then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto them, why have I found grace in thine eyes that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing that I am a stranger? That's a great question, is it? Why would Boaz be gracious unto Ruth, a Moabitess, one of the enemies of Israel? Maybe she was a good-looking woman. We don't know that. Maybe she wasn't. Certainly she was a hard worker. But is that the reason why? Read on verse 11. And Boaz answered and said unto her, it hath fully been shown me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thy husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knowest not heretofore. Man, that's a great sacrifice. You were down there, you were living life the way it's supposed to be lived, and you gave up everything. And you've come here to take care of your mother-in-law. That's really virtuous. But that's not the reason. He was gracious. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord of Israel. Because you've really worked hard, but that's not the reason. Here it is. Under whose wings thou art come to trust. A faithful person will look for a grace giver. A grace giver will always find a faithful person. You've trusted in the God whom we serve. It is necessary for me to be gracious unto you. That's how our God works. Verse 13, then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for that thou hast comforted me, and for thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not like unto thine handmaids. And Boaz said unto her, at mealtime come thou hither, and eat of the bread, and dip thy morsel into vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, and she did eat, and was sufficed, and left. I want you, when it's supper time, I want you to sit with the rest of us. We'll have, I don't know, it's not Pizza Hut called in, but we'll have something there, and you partake. Don't feel that you're on the outside. I want you to eat with the rest of us. And eat as much as you want. Obviously, she was not a teenager at this point in time. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, Let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not, and let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them that she may glean them, and rebuke her not. As you're going out, not only are you to do your job, but I want you to drop some of that wheat on purpose and let her pick it up. I know it belongs to me, but let her have it. So she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out that she had gleaned and was about an ephah of barley, and she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she brought forth and gave her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. And she did this day after day after day after day. Verse 23, so she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. That's good. Except for one thing. Harvest time comes to an end. Now what's she going to do? She's been given a daily provision, but the daily provision is going to come to an end. She's not going to have anything else. She needs something more permanent. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose handmaidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself, therefore, and anoint thee. Put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie. Thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. Put yourself for a moment in Ruth's position. Your mother-in-law says to you, here is a man that's going to go to sleep tonight in the threshing floor. I want you to go in. I want you to pull back either the hem of his garment or a blanket that he's underneath, uncovering his feet. I want you to lay down next to him, and when he wakes up, whatever he tells you to do, you do it. Sure. Why not? Unless you trust in the God who is sovereign over these things, and the righteousness of a grace giver. And she said unto her, All that thou sayest unto me, I will do. And she went down unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he was just satisfied, nothing more than that. He went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn, and she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid. Literally, he was startled. Something awoke him. Probably cold feet. And I'm serious. Probably it was cold feet. And turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. Now that'll get you awake in a hurry. And he said, Who art thou? And she answered, I am Ruth, thy handmaiden. And she is going to make a very presumptuous request. Spread therefore thy skirt over thy handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. We are not accustomed to the custom. But in Israel, that was a request for marriage. I am in a person who is destitute. I have no one else but you to supply for me. I want you, and only you, to be my husband and provider. And he said, Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter. Mark those words in your memory for just a moment or two. You'll see why in just a second. Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast shown more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not the young men, whether poor or rich. You could have gone out and you could have searched the city here looking for some nice-looking young person who's rich, and he could have been a husband to you and provided all the things that you would really like to have. But you wanted to follow the way that God has provided. And that would be a kinsman redeemer. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. Nothing of impropriety happened that night, but a bold request to be married. Well, she goes home. And the next day, chapter 4, verse 1, Boaz went up to the gate and sat him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by. Now there was one who was a closer kinsman than Boaz was. Unto whom he said, Ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. Place of business transaction was the gate of the city. And he took 10 men, the elders of the city, and said, Sit ye down here. And they sat down. And he said unto the kinsman, Naomi, that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, Buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is none to redeem it besides thee, and I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. Oh boy, property. Then said Boaz, What day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. It's a twofer. Not only do you get the land, you get a wife out of it too. Oops. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. Maybe he was intimidated. Maybe he was speaking truthfully here and saying, look, that's going to put an economic burden on me that I can't do. Therefore, you're rich, you buy it. But whatever the case, he turns it over to Boaz. Now, this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing. For to confirm all things, a man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor, and this was the testimony in Israel. A shoe was that which you used to walk across a property. If you took it off and gave it to another, basically what you're saying is, here is my right to walk across this property, it's now yours. It was just symbolic. Therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, Buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe. And Boaz said unto the elders and unto all the people, You are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren and from the gate of this place. You are witnesses this day. And all the people that were in the gate and the elders said, We are witnesses. The Lord make thee the woman that is come into thy house like Rachel and like Leah, which too did build the house of Israel. And do thou worthily at Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. He goes back into history. These people are saying, I want you to be really productive in the will of God. Just like Rachel and Leah, who had 12 boys, and the whole nation of Israel is coming out of those 12 sons. I want you to be really productive. Then they said this, And let thy house be like the house of Perez. Wait a minute. All that sin in the life of Judah and Tamar, and we want to go back there? Why there? Be like the house of Perez, who Tamar bare unto Judah, of the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman, of this young woman. What was the deal with Tamar and Judah? Judah was an old man. Tamar was a young woman. Boaz said to Ruth, Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter. You're young enough to be my daughter. When she was in Moab and she's getting ready to return with Naomi, Naomi says, look, if you go back with me, you're going to be an old woman until you have a husband. He's going to be much younger than you. Ironically, in the will of God, the tables are turned. She has an old husband who loves her and is a grace giver. And she's able to bear children. And verse 13 says, and Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And if you come to the end of the chapter, you find out that son's name was Obed, who is the father of Jesse, who is the father of David, who eventually becomes the father of Jesus Christ. You talk about grace, all on account of a young woman's faith. A couple of applications. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8 says, for by grace are you saved through faith. In order for grace to be received, faith must first be demonstrated, just like with Ruth and Boaz. Both Ruth and Orpah were exposed to a family of Hebrews that apparently were good to them. And they saw the goodness of a Jewish religion, and consequently a Jewish God. And both of them had a positive, to a different degree, response to that goodness. But when Orpah was confronted with what Naomi saw was limitations, Orpah could only see what made sense for her immediate and not what faith could produce in time. Ruth, on the other hand, saw by faith what could be a gracious provision of God for eternity, or at least for all time. Orpah said, it is more important for me to deal with the temporal. And hopefully eternity will take care of itself. If I do good now, and if I go back and I do this, and I do this, and I do this, and I do this, I'll be able to support myself. Maybe I'll find a husband, and that'll be great, and that can be helpful to me. But it's something that I have to do. And if I do all these good things now, maybe in eternity, God will look upon me and say, well, you're a pretty good person. Look at all those good works. And Orpah goes back, and what do we find was her outcome? Well, wait a minute. We don't find anything. But Ruth said, I need to deal with the future, with eternity now, and the present will take care of itself. She trusted in a God who would provide graciously. And she said, I am putting everything on Him to provide for me forever. And He'll take care of each and every day until we get to forever. And that's the difference between a saved person and an unsaved person. An unsaved person may even trust in God to provide for today, but they don't trust in Him to provide for eternity. It's, I got to do this. I got to do this. And I don't need a grace giver. I just need somebody who maybe will help me along. A saved person says, I can't do anything. I'm a widow. I'm without a husband. I have no hope here. My only hope is in God. And they put their faith and trust in what He's done for them on Calvary's cross. And if you're here this morning and you've never trusted Him, don't leave in that condition. There's no hope for the future apart from Him. Orpah said, If I follow Naomi, I will have to give up everything and gain nothing. I'm going to go back to Israel, and what will there be there for me? There's not going to be a husband for me there. There's not going to be anything for me there. I'll just barely get by. I'm going to have to give up. I got family here. At least I could go back to my mother's house, and maybe there's brothers and sisters or something along those lines. At least there's a house there. I could go back, but I'd have to give all that up. If I go back to my gods, I will lose nothing. Ruth said, if I follow Naomi, I will give up nothing, but I'll gain everything. Because there really is nothing. Oh yes, I have family, and not that they're inconsequential. But there's nothing here for me. My life is with God. And if I go back to my gods, I will lose everything. Let me ask you a question this morning. What are you not willing to give up for God? What is there that you would say, oh, I just can't give that thing up. It's too important to me. I'm going to get personal. Maybe I shouldn't do it before Christmas. Maybe I should wait until after Christmas is over. But God put this on the preaching calendar for today. So if I offend you and I lose a Christmas gift, so be it. You going to be back tonight? I can't do that. The Steelers are on at 4:30. They're playing the Patriots. It's probably the most important game of the season. I can't give that up to come back to worship God. I'll lose everything. Well, it's okay. The Steelers are going to lose anyway, too. So, well, I picked on mostly guys. There's a Hallmark Christmas movie on that I haven't seen yet. I'm not sure there is one, but hypothetical. But you get the thought. We put so many things as being valuable that we just can't give up for the worship of God. And I don't mean just the worship service. I mean the whole of life. We become too much like Orpah and too little like Ruth. And we find out too late that if we would have sacrificed those things that we thought were good, we would find only better. Best in the grace of God. Ruth gave up everything. She got a husband and a son and a Savior. Can't get better than that, can you? Let's pray. Father, thank you for the testimony of Ruth. I wonder if the Apostle Paul had that in mind when he said in Ephesians chapter 2, for by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Father, I wonder if there's one here this morning, two here this morning, any here this morning, that came in trusting in their own goodness and not in the gracious provision of God for the forgiveness of sins, a righteousness that enables to stand before an infinitely holy God for eternity. And if there is such a one here today, and as many as might be here this morning, may they recognize, like the Apostle Paul in Philippians 3, that all those things that they thought were just treasures could not be sacrificed, should be counted as waste for the excellency of the knowledge of Jesus Christ, who is Lord. And might they come to faith in that gracious provision of Calvary's cross and the shedding of His blood there for their sins. Just a very simple faith, like that of Ruth, who said, "Thy people shall be my people, but most importantly, thy God, my God." Lord, may each and every one of us who is here this morning be not unwilling to sacrifice anything for the excellency of that knowledge, that we might be found 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days of the year, in the center of Your will. For the glory of God, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.